Welcome to Vassals of Kingsgrave on this festive edition. Today we'll be reviewing the latest edition of A Christmas Carol, as shown on BBC and FX in America. So I'll be joined today by Bina.
Hey everyone, it's Bina 007 on the forums.
And Jock.
Hello Jock here on the forums.
And my name is Glenn Douglas Rivers on the forums. So we'll be reviewing A Christmas Carol, most likely the most adapted story that's in media. There's just so many versions of it, so many films, so many TV shows that have their own Christmas Carol episodes, so many radio plays, different books, and this is, I think it was 176 years since it was first written. Then there's been other stories about other versions, like The Man Who Invented Christmas. So what do you think it is that makes the story so timeless?
It's a good point, isn't it? Because there's other Christmas stories, but none have been as enduring. I think it's because it gives us all hope. Like, you take the worst possible miserly person and you melt his heart. It's like a beautiful redemption story. And then you have the lovely family with Tiny Tim and the jovial nephew. So it's this beautiful mix of the comic, the family stuff, and then the horror. So it has something for everyone. And it's really quick, like it's a short story, so it's very easily digestible. But I think it's that redemption, it's that hopefulness, I think.
I would say the same too. That you can look forward rather than forget that, of course, Scrooge has done some terrible things, but he's given that chance. And also the fact that he's visited by his old friend, and his friend doesn't want the same fate that befalls him.
And even the idea that, you know, we're recording on New Year's Day, when often we think of resolutions, and it's almost more of a New Year's Day than a Christmas story, because it's about making a new resolution for your life. And there's that line at the end when he says, you know, some people laughed at him in the sudden change, but he didn't care about that. And I think, you know, that's quite brave, you know, when you've lived your life by this certain way, to say, I don't care what people think, I'm now going to change. I really love that. I really respond to that.
What was your first memory of A Christmas Carol, Jock?
I think it would be the Muppets version.
Oh, me too. Me too.
Me too.
I know that I've watched a few different versions of it. Muppets was probably the first one I watched. I know I've watched one with Patrick Stewart, and the Jim Carrey animated version.
Yep.
I know I've watched the Alistair Sim version too. Then just like, it's hard to avoid. I know it was taught to us in school. We did it in maybe when I was 10. We studied the book. And then I've read it personally a few times. One thing that I always remember and annoys me is we did this quiz. So it was like the end of year, before Christmas holidays, going into the new year, and they had a Christmas quiz, and it was for charity. So you would pay £1, and then over the whole school, I think maybe £500 or £600 was raised. And then if you won the quiz, then you would get some of the money, maybe like £100, towards it. And one of the questions was around A Christmas Carol. It was like, name the three ghosts that visited Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. And I was thinking, oh yeah, I've got this, because I know that people will incorrectly name them and say it was Ghost of Christmas Past, Present and Future. But I said Ghost of Christmas Past, Present and Yet to Come.
And very good.
There was this. There was another question which was around Bruce Almighty, which was maybe came out a few months before that, and it was who played God in Bruce Almighty. And a lot of people, a lot of friends, were writing down Jim Carrey, but I wrote down Morgan Freeman. And then those questions were scored wrong. And they said, oh no, we've got the right answers here. And it was like past, present and future. And then the other one, which they had Jim Carrey as the correct answer. And in the end, it didn't matter because I wouldn't. It doesn't mean that even if they did score those correctly, that I would have won the quiz. But it still annoys me.
No, I agree. Like, there's nothing worse than a pub quiz where you actually do genuinely know the right answer and the quiz master has got it wrong.
Yes.
And there's no higher authority you can appeal to. Jock, have you read the book?
No, I haven't. Okay. I think the only Dickens book I've ever actually read is Great Expectations.
Oh, I love that.
I love that book. I love Dickens. I think, like you, Glenn, I read it around 10 years old, maybe. Though we didn't learn it in school, but I think someone gave me a version, which I couldn't find. So I actually bought a new version and reread it today. And it's a surprising book. It's still beautifully written. It grabs you by the scruff of the neck and takes you through. Dickens, like, he just writes like nobody else. Like, you can tell when he's passionate about something and in love with it, and it's just beautifully, beautifully done. And it's short, right? You can read it in a couple of hours or whatever. But so if anyone listening to this hasn't read it, I'd really encourage you to.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, and I remember when we read it in school that because I had just known the Muppet version, and maybe I had seen a few other shows done it, do their version of Christmas Carol, I was still in the mindset of that Scrooge is visited by two people, so Jacob and Robert Marley. So then when in the book they're talking about his old friend Jacob Marley visiting, that thrown me. And then there's a few other things that come up. I know that I was reading an article where a lot of changes from the book in movies that you've seen are really popular, so people are quite surprised when they read the original text. Like when most movie versions have Scrooge visiting the Cratchits on Christmas Day, which doesn't really happen in the book.
Yeah, he just sends them the prize turkey by taxi, right? yeah, exactly. And I think it was really interesting watching this over Christmas and seeing a lot of the Twitter furore about what was and wasn't accurate or like Dickens. And obviously this does take some very large imaginative leaps, but a lot of people are like, there's no Ali Baba in the original. I'm like, well, he's not really a ghost, but there is that bit when he goes back to his schoolboy days and sees himself reading Ali Baba and really getting into it. So it's not from nothing, you know.
That's true.
And even like the first episode I didn't like because I just felt it was really long and not much happened. But then I was reading the novel today and my version's, I think it's about 140 pages long, and Marley doesn't show up till about 45 pages. And I was like, oh my God, it really is the case that the ghosts don't show up for the first third. So I think sometimes you have to be careful about it's a source text that has been adapted so many times. We kind of think we know what is canon, but actually sometimes you just have to go back and read the book and think, oh, okay.
So the BBC version that stars Guy Pearce as Scrooge, we've got Jacob Marley, who's played by Stephen Graham, and Joe Alwyn, who plays Bob Cratchit. Then it's split, well, in the UK it's split over three episodes, so just tying in with Christmas, the first episode on the 22nd, then the 23rd, and then the 24th. And in America it's shown as a 2-hour show, so it's unedited and all put together.
Gosh, that's long. It's a shame you don't have an American on to know what that was like to watch. That feels quite intense.
I did like the first episodes. I really loved the feel of it. Brought me back to Dickensian Mina and the feel of that show.
And, oh, I love that show so much.
You know, all the small changes that they made to it too. Although, straight away, I was thinking, this Bob Cratchit's a bit snippy for my liking. And it
Bob Cratchit had a little bit of the revolutionary spirit to him, but mm-hmm. there is that bit in the book where the nephew comes in and tells him, gives him this big rousing speech about Christmas and celebrating Christmas, and Bob Cratchit cheers from his side room. yeah, but you're right. I mean, it's very much a movie that, or set of shows that is written at this current point in British history, right, where, you know, we're 10 years into austerity, people are worried about income inequality, people aren't sitting back and taking it, so there's a feistiness. I'm not sure if you did an adaptation of this today that was just straight to the book, where the poor Cratchits just sit there sort of in their poverty, but nonetheless grateful for everything they have. I'm not sure that would feel credible. I think it feels more realistic to say that they would have justified grievances and mm-hmm. feel the injustice of their situation more. So it's not just the wife in this, it is.
I quite like the first episode. I quite liked having, like, see it, like, slowly sort of build up to it.
I was thinking that the pacing could have been a bit quicker, because we're still on, like, up to the second episode, end of the second episode, and we're still on the first ghost.
I know, I was so worried about the third episode. I was like, there was so much to cram in.
And it reminded me of Harry Potter with the last book, that they're trying to destroy the Horcruxes, and halfway through that book, they're still on the first one. So it's even though it does get tied up and they do it in time, I always just think, oh, but how can they do it in this time if they've taken this long so far?
Yeah, and actually the first part, because we just watched it as a family over Christmas every evening, and the first part was so slow. I was really kind of not bored, but because I love the production design, I love the atmosphere of it, but I was like, come on guys, are we gonna crack on? And we almost as a family didn't watch the second episode, and I'm so pleased we did, because it was phenomenal. But I wonder, for those of us in Britain, I wonder what the viewing figures were like night by night, like if a lot of people dropped out after the first episode, or whether the word of mouth was so good on social media that people actually more tuned in on the second episode.
There was a big drop in the viewers. I don't know about episode 3, but I know that when I was, after I had watched the first episode, I was checking Google, and the first thing that came up was an article about that there was a 1.4 million drop in viewers, so 30%. I think it was 4.7 million watched the first episode, and then it was 3.3 million for the second episode.
And I mean, that could also just be because the first one was on
Sunday night.
Yeah, exactly. And then as you get to Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, people have more going on family-wise.
True.
It's harder to just sit there at 9 o'clock at night and watch it. But we did watch all three nights. But I felt parts 2 and 3 were amazing, and part 1 in the context of those was good. But yeah, it had its pacing. A weird. I mean, obviously a deliberate choice, but I felt the pacing was a bit weird.
Plus, I think Dickensian had a similar drop. There was a big drop in viewing figures. People showed up for the first episode. It was on a Sunday night, but then because it was shown sometimes in the afternoon, sometimes continuously over 20 nights, a lot of people stopped watching it. But this one, I was thinking, because it's only 3 episodes, that more there would be consistent viewing figures over the 3 days.
Yeah, I wonder if people were just put off by the tone, and, you know, BBC, you know, prestige Christmas viewing, family friendly, and you're expecting something heartwarming and uplifting, and, you know, it's quite sweary, it's quite dark, and yeah, maybe there were just people who didn't want that and didn't know that it was created by the guy who did Peaky Blinders, so didn't know it was going to have that, you know, edge to it that you wouldn't necessarily expect.
Now, with the changes that are introduced, that I guess would you consider it a refreshing take on the story?
I do. I mean, I found that its politics are very clear, and I think that's okay, because I do think they are the politics of Dickens, and not necessarily in A Christmas Carol, but clearly in his other works, he deals with things like child abuse and prostitution and destitute people being forced into extreme positions and rapacious capitalism and horrible owners not caring for their workers. So I feel that everything that they took and imaginatively came from somewhere in Dickens. And I think the people on Twitter who were complaining about that, I'm like, Dickens is really dark. You know, read Bleak House. That, I mean, there's beautiful, lovely, warm-hearted characters in there, but his books are very raw and do not look away from the evils of society at all. So I really liked it all, and I found it really moving. I mean, some of the stuff about the mill owners and the way they do the funeral service for the miners and stuff, I found, I mean, it's very heavy-handed, but so is Dickens, you know. So I think the strengths and faults are there in Dickens, if not specifically in A Christmas Carol. And I loved it. I thought it had good humour. I mean, to start off with a little boy pissing on the grave of Jacob Marley, but by episode three, you see the complete profundity of why he's so angry at this man and what this man did to his family. I think it's just brilliant writing. How about you, Glenn?
Oh, I thought that first shot too was really a bold statement that this isn't what you're used to with A Christmas Carol, because it's starts off, you're in the graveyard, and then you're not quite sure what's happening, but then it becomes clear when it reveals the name of Jacob Marley on the grave. So I really like that, and people realise, oh yeah, this will be a bit different to what I've seen in those 10 other versions that I've seen. So I really like that part of it.
So that plus Stephen Graham using the F word like 5 minutes in, I think it was the showrunner just telling us, just brace yourself, this ain't going to be the usual thing. How about you, Jock? Did you find it surprising, good, bad, incredible, the changes?
Yeah, well, I liked it all. It was entertaining every day.
Did you clue on in the first episode that Mrs. Cratchit was on the game, or potentially on the game? As soon as they started talking about the uncle in America or whatever sending money, I just turned to my ass and was like, oh, is Mrs. Cratchit secretly on the game? And then, of course, you find out what's been going on, and it's like so much more psychologically disgusting and horrible and humiliating. Well, I really loved it, though. I thought the actress who played her, I'd only ever seen her in episodes of Sherlock in a really small role. I was like, wow, she's really amazing. Hope she gets more work now.
I hope so. Yeah, I loved the mystery elements to it. So, who is this benefactor, this person that provided the money for the operation for Tiny Sim? And I was thinking by the end of the first episode that, okay, it's either Jacob Marley or Scrooge, but then I was thinking, oh, but it must be Scrooge, because then that'll make it more interesting. And then, oh no, it's not until episode two that you see that invitation from Scrooge for her to visit his house, and you're left in the dark of what happened. And I know that I was looking on Digital Spy forums, and a lot of people were saying, oh, it'll just be a mind trick. He won't actually sleep with her. And turns out they were right.
Yeah, it was really, it reminded me a lot. There's a scene in Amadeus, the extended edition from like 30 odd years ago, where the wife of Mozart goes to Salieri asking that she's desperate. And she kind of offers to prostitute herself, and he says no, but it's like way more humiliating that he doesn't actually sleep with her. And it really reminded me of that. It's, really phenomenal. So well played, so chilling. Because you know, when you can see it's going to happen, and just seeing the man, seeing himself do this thing. You know, Guy Pearce, I've always thought, is a great actor. And just, yeah, this is a showcase for him, that particular scene. Yeah, really, really phenomenal. I was more shocked with the child abuse invention, just because that felt so dark for Christmas Eve.
And it mostly, it felt really dark, but it also, I think also because I could see it, I could imagine it happening, especially in those times where, you know, the headmaster of the school, teacher of a school, then parents respect the teachers. So it was a different time back then, so I could imagine it actually happening.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It's just so dark. And it is, you know, his school. I mean, this is exactly as in the novel, right? Like, his very first place the ghost takes him is back to school and him being rescued from school. But this idea that he was abused. And then it kind of raises this really interesting moral question that resonates for the rest of the three episodes. Because in the story, as soon as he's taken back to school and sees Alibaba and everything, he's immediately wanting redemption. Like, he even says to the second ghost, right, let's get on with this. I've already been changed. Like, he doesn't resist it at all. Whereas in the TV show, he really resists redemption. And part of that resistance is, well, it's not my fault. I was abused. And this kind of moral thing about how far are you allowed to get away with it? Have you got to just take ownership of your actions nonetheless? So I think introducing the sex abuse really does, it makes it really interesting ethically and makes it more realistic, because obviously most people who are abusive or have lead lives like Scrooge that are very twisted ethically have been corrupted and twisted in their childhood. So I really loved it. I was just shocked that they went there. I really was.
I think I was shocked by the father more when you see him bring a mouse into the house and then father cuts its head off.
Yeah, that was grim. Poor mouse.
And I thought that made more sense of why Scrooge hated Christmas compared to the child abuse angle of it.
Yeah, I think so. Well, it's the combination, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you find it convincing, the idea that if he'd have only heard Lottie standing up to the teacher or the headmaster, his outlook would have been changed? I don't know. I mean, I just think the fact that your child abused would, you know.
Yeah, the damage was done.
Yeah. Does the fact that your sister was heroic really change the fact that you still feel damaged and betrayed by your dad who sold you into prostitution effectively?
But I think it would have made him, at least he would have heard her. He would have heard his sister stand up for him, that he would know his sister loved him, and because of that he would have a greater love for his sister and his mother, because they were saying, oh, we just can't afford the school anymore, whereas they just want him home, they want him away from that. But they're saying that they can't afford the school as an excuse.
Yeah, I don't know. That was the only bit that I was just like, I mean, the other interesting part of that is then they therefore made the relationship with the sister really important, and they made her very active, like not just in threatening the teacher, but giving her a moral center to this. Whereas in the book, it's just his childhood sweetheart that he then doesn't marry. Then he sees her again, older and fatter with all her kids around her, being all happy. But I guess by focusing on the sister in this way, it does mean that the female parts of this, like, they've really amped up the importance and the agency of the women in Mrs. Cratchit and the sister. They're like really dominant, which is kind of interesting.
Is the sister younger in the book?
Oh, I can't remember. I just assumed older because she comes to get him from school, doesn't she?
Oh, true.
I have to say, I really like the actress who plays the sister too. She was in Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
You know, when I was watching, I was thinking it was Lady Mary from Downton Abbey.
But oh, they have a quite similar look, yeah. Don't they? Yeah. So this actress, I think she's married to Tom Hardy, the actor. And she had kids, so she was sort of out of the limelight for a bit. But I think she's a really strong actor. The other really funny one was Ali Baba's, played by the guy who, I don't know if you guys watch What They Do in the Shadows, which is kind of like the spoof TV show about vampires, and he plays Nandor, one of like really vain vampires. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, it's Nandor. It's such a great TV show. I love that show so much.
Like, We go back with Nosferatu. Like, the sex was absolutely fantastic. Like, the positions, incredibly acrobatic stuff.
Very true.
So I guess it was set over 3 episodes. That's right. So the first episode, it's just like setting the scene. You get introduced to some of the characters, and it's not really until the end of that first episode that Jacob Marley and Scrooge meet, and that's where does Jacob Marley go down to hell during that episode?
I can't remember.
No, it's purgatory. Purgatory.
Oh, what about the whole witchcraft story that the whole thing was because Mary Cratchit summoned the spirits to visit Scrooge?
Yeah, I didn't really like that.
Why not?
Just seemed out of place. Do you think that Jacob Marley's redemption will count? Because, like, his whole entire thing's been motivated with self-interest, trying to get Scrooge to do the whole redemption thing.
I just felt it was, like, a little bit weird. Like, it's consistent in a way, because in the story, Jacob Marley is just condemned, isn't he? And so, regardless of what happens to Scrooge, he's just condemned. There's no chance for him. Like, obviously, I was kind of like, I always used to think as a kid, like, did no one come to him and give him that option? Did he fail? Did he not get it? And then I felt it was similarly unfair that his chances at redemption were all based on whether Scrooge would pass the test. Like, I just feel really sorry for Jacob Marley. Like, doesn't he get his own ability? Yeah. So I just feel sorry for Jacob Marley. But, you know, it's great having Stephen Graham just swearing and running around looking desperate. So that was great fun. It was kind of interesting, though, because I felt that when you look at the way the ghosts are, or who the ghosts are in the original, it felt to me more Christian in a way, or there was more religious imagery in who they are and how they are. Whereas this one is very much shorn of the religion, I feel. And there's not much religion in the original anyway, but it's very much, it's kind of like the people who are judging him aren't really the spirits, as in coming from God, but that these vengeful women, or the mine working families, or Mrs. Cratchit, have conjured them up. And even at the end, when Scrooge says, you know, I've got so much work to do, and she kind of looks at him and says, yeah, but it's almost like, we're not going to forget what you did, and we're going to hold you to that to account. It's not as complete or as joyful a redemption. There's still that kind of like, we'll be watching you. Yeah, which is maybe more realistic. I don't know.
And so once we learn of the... Oh, I think at one point in the story, Scrooge said something like he had £572, and he gave £30 of that to Mary Cratchit for the operation for Tiny Tim, and that was 5 years ago. And he said something like that was profit from that year, the £572. So if he's made a similar amount each year, then he'll have quite a lot. In the end, he decides to close the company, and he gives £500 to Bob Cratchit as a thank you for his service, and then that money will go to his children. That might mean that Tiny Tim will live longer. But I was just thinking, could he not just give Bob Cratchit a pay rise instead?
Yeah, which is what happens in the books, right? And it's almost like it's kind of weird, because in the book, he gives him a pay rise, but he's still going to be in his counting house, which I guess is a kind of a stockbroker. But he's still basically going to be in the business of capitalism. He's just going to do it more ethically, I think we're meant to believe. And I think what we're meant to believe is that in this version, in the TV version, they're basically saying that capitalism is red in tooth and claw. And if you really want to reform, the best way to do it is to give up your investment management business.
Oh, right.
Fully renamed. And just set as you've made all your money, just set aside doing good works. And okay, that's fine.
The only kind of investment we've actually seen him do is sort of blank field investments, and maybe that's how Scrooge actually knows.
Yeah. Because in this one, Scrooge is more like a private equity guy. He's more like a sort of corporate raider or asset stripper, isn't he? I mean, that's what explicitly he does to the guy whose factory he buys up when the dad's done for gambling debts, and then he just breaks it up for parts, basically. Yeah, how did it strike you, Glenn, that the ending where he's going to basically no longer be in business?
I guess with the... I guess it's because I'm just thinking of all the other versions that I've seen, and he stays in business, but he just gives a better working condition to Bob Cratchit, and then he becomes sort of like an uncle to Tiny Tim, so I was missing that part of the story. But I guess it makes sense because it's a bit more realistic, this ending, that the Cratchit family wouldn't just instantly forgive him after all the years of hating him.
Yeah, I see that.
I also thought that the ghosts, one of the, I guess I'm thinking of the Muppet Christmas Carol, where the ghosts are nice and friendly, the first one and two, and then it has a bigger impact when you see the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. It's this dark, death-like figure, whereas all the ghosts are quite scary in this version.
Yeah. And that goes to my point with, like, you don't have the lovely spirit of Christmas just pouncing around in, like, a white sort of, like, you know, sheet and some ivy twined around it, you know. I actually thought the sister, the big sister, was the most scary because she was the most heart, like, you know, like elder siblings can be, like, the most, yeah, serious. Sorry, Jock, I interrupted you.
Just going to say, like, it would have been cool if, like, for the, this is Muppet's Christmas Carol, if they use the animatronics for the Skeksis for the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come.
Yeah, oh my goodness. What did you guys think of the production design? One of the things that, I mean, I loved it. I loved the way they'd done it. I loved the costumes, but having reread the story, I was like, you know, there's a bit of property porn insofar as Scrooge lives in this really handsome looking detached house, which almost feels like it could be on Blackheath or in Greenwich or somewhere. I'd love to know where they filmed it. And in the book, he lives in basically, like, he would never be that extravagant to live in such a big house. And in the book, he just lives in some sort of, you know, some chambers, some rented rooms where all the other rooms are sort of now offices converted, and it's just really dingy. And I thought that would have been more realistic. I also thought when they went to the Cratchit house that it was just way too big. Like, how would they possibly be living in such a big house? And they had, I remember seeing they had like paintings on the wall and stuff. I was like, surely you would have sold those ages ago. And then this idea that Tiny Tim specifically is going to die because he's going to be in an ice skating accident because he just wants to skate like his big sister. And I don't know, I found that sort of like a little bit, I just prefer the idea that sometime in the future he's going to die because he's just going to live on a poor diet with no medical care. And, you know, so I found that a bit melodramatic. Well, like now we're going to have Scrooge go out and sort of, you know, put gravel on the ice so that it melts and you can't skate on it. I just felt, I don't know. I found
that. Oh, you're right. I didn't like that either.
Like, you could lose a lot of luxuries here when he's speaking to him about asking for money and stuff.
What did we think about the Cratchit family, which is you know, the mother's black, the father's white, the daughter's black, and the son is white.
Oh, the colorblind casting.
Yes.
loved it. I want more of that. Didn't bother me at all. And, you know, I just think in general those times were probably more culturally diverse in London than people realise, just because of the empire. And, you know, I just know from my own family history there were Indians running around Victoria in London. So I just think it probably, whether or not it's realistic, I don't think it matters. I just think it worked really well. True. To me, it's a bit like His Dark Materials. I know that's an alternate world, so in a way it's kind of irrelevant whether it's realistic, but I'm just loving that the BBC seems to be championing diversity in casting. And also, I don't know if this is true, but it looks like they never call Tiny Tim Tiny Tim, which is probably good. And it just feels like Tim, the actor playing him, is genuinely differently abled. So they didn't get someone and make them limp along with a fake leg. They actually just cast someone who maybe has spina bifida. I don't know. It was hard to sort of figure out, but I just thought that was really good and really respectful, and I loved it. And I'm not sure I was on social media a lot about A Christmas Carol, and I'm not sure, I mean, I saw some stuff about the colorblind casting that a few people taking issue, but I don't know, what was the reception like to it, do you know?
Oh, I think I've seen a few things on Digital Spy about it, that they said politically correctness, or, you know, casting that's politically correct, something like that. But it wasn't that many people that said it.
And it's not politically correct if the quality, I mean, it's only politically correct if you're sort of compromising on quality. But, you know, to my point about the actress playing Mrs. Cratchit, I can't, you know, it was such a moving performance. You got the humiliation, you got the strength, you got the courage. She portrayed so many emotions so beautifully well. To me, it's just like, you've cast the best actress for that role and she happens to be black. Does it really matter? Dickens evidently didn't put characters of, well, I mean, certainly not in A Christmas Carol. But I just think it's lovely. And I think, this is going to sound so trivial, but you can compare it a bit to Wurzel Gummidge, which is another show that was reinvented on our screens. And I just thought it was absolutely delightful. And again, they made that, not colorblind, but yeah, they just made that more diverse. And I think it's tremendous. I really do. It didn't detract for me at all. So, yeah. And it's something I was listening to a Hollywood Reporter podcast. It's their TV review podcast. It has their TV critics on it. And they were talking about colorblind casting in His Dark Materials and just saying it's something that you don't see as much on American TV. And that they were very thankful for it. And I agree.
How long do you think we'll see another version of the story?
I mean, it's due another film, isn't it?
I think I had read that there's going to be a film next year, but I just can't seem to find it now.
Let me have a look on IMDb.
Or I thought I had read that there was a film due out next year about it.
What's your favourite version is maybe a good question. I think mine is the Blackadder Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one. I like Blackadder's because it's a bit different. A Christmas Carol, and then there's It's a Wonderful Life. Those are the two stories that big TV shows always try and do their own version of.
Mm-hmm. So there's about like 8 different versions of A Christmas Carol that are currently in production, according to IMDb. The one that probably has the best chance, oh my god, this looks so interesting. So there's a version being developed by Annapurna Films, which is the production house that did, I mean, it does lots of stuff, including 12 Years a Slave, being directed by Bennett Miller, who did Foxcatcher, Oscar winning, Capote, and Moneyball, so multiple Oscar winning. Adapted for the screen by Tom Stoppard, the celebrated playwright, who also did Shakespeare in Love, so very Oscar winning-y. Being produced by Jennifer Fox, Megan Ellison, Scott Rudin, Bennett Miller. An old and evil businessman who doesn't believe in Christmas is haunted by 3 ghosts. But there's no cast attached to it yet.
Has anyone seen the female version where it's Vanessa Williams as Scrooge?
No, that sounds amazing.
I think it's... I've never watched it, but I think I've heard of it that it's called A Diva Christmas.
A Diva Christmas. Now I really want to see that. Well, there is a script for this Bennett Miller Christmas Carol, and it's the only film he's working on, apparently. So, sounds like it's going to happen. That sounds like it's going to get all the Oscars, right? I mean, that's like a pedigree and a half. I guess the question is, what new can you bring to it? Apparently, there was a 2019 version of A Christmas Carol, 75 minutes, drama, fantasy, music, directed by Mark Hamill.
Oh, wow.
Is it the Mark Hamill? No. Mark Hamill with a C, not a K.
Ah.
English actor, director, musician. Best known for writing and directing the British grindhouse movie The Wrong Floor. That's why none of us have heard of it. But it goes to show, doesn't it, that there's big budget, there's low budget, there's everything in between. Like, this continues to just spawn and spawn versions.
One thing that I always thought, if anyone's seen Treasure Planet, so that's a futuristic animated version of Treasure Island.
The Disney one.
Yeah, the Disney one. Yeah. And I always thought, oh, you know, that's something they could do, just like have a set it in the future rather than 1800s Victorian England. I know there's been some modern day versions of it.
Okay.
I guess you could also like sort of fit in like real history of like sort of like people who were basically Scrooge, like John Paul Getty, and have like Tiny Tim be his grandson who's held hostage. Have people visit him before he gives up the ransom finally.
I feel I have nothing else to say now.
Same.
That's okay.
I know you do these podcasts and you think you'll have tons to say, but then you've said everything within 20 minutes.
Well, I think the problem is we all liked it. So I posted that I was reading the novel for the podcast prep, and East Texas Direwolf. Oh, I think if you add Shane, or if I add Shane, he might jump on and tell us why he didn't like it.
Oh, yeah. Sounds good.
How do I add someone? Well, how do you add someone?
Let me try.
In fact, if I'd have checked Facebook, he would have been on from the beginning. That's really annoying. He might have gone now. I think if there's disagreement...
He's offline now.
That's a shame. It's if there's disagreement, then I think it goes better, because if we're all going, yeah, that was really good. Yeah, we really like the casting. There's less to say. I'm about to post the Watchmen one, and that's going to be really interesting, because I think the main podcast, they really didn't like how it, some of it, and in the after show, myself and David HHH really did. So there'll be more kind of contrast, in a sense.
Oh, true.
Anyway, I think it's good that we all liked it. I think people should try and catch it. I think it's a really, really great adaptation, and just goes to show that you can use something imaginative, but still honour the spirit of the books. Well, thank you very much for hosting, Glenn.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, thank you both for joining.
Right. Have a lovely evening, everyone. And,
thank you, everyone.